Hi everybody, the next session will be about software patenting, and I think every one of you has followed the topic of it, and okay, it's rejected by the EU Parliament, but still there are still some threats, and sorry, okay, and Tomer Lombard and André Riebentisch will introduce you into the topic and would like to discuss with you about this, and the topic of the talk, or let's say, yeah, it's more a talk. Software patenting, adequate means of protecting for software. Okay, thank you.
I forget to mention that yesterday, and I think also today, that we are here for FFII, Foundation for Free Information Infrastructure. And they also have a regional group, and before I forget it, it's bbffii.org, and the next meeting will be 19 January 2006. I don't know where, but it will be announced on this regional group Berlin-Brandenburg here in Berlin. And they meet each 14 days in an irregular manner in Berlin here. So this is the regional group, and we are FFII Europe, so to speak. It's about, the title is Adequate Means of Protection for Software. Protection for software, patent law is one possible means of protection for software. It's an instrument. And what our discussion is about, we pass a little time because of the technical problems, but let's talk a little bit about the fundamentals of the debate, which are always useful when you discuss the issue with politicians, because it's a complicated issue and you have to understand what's wrong about it. And often with one word you can somehow then the Caesar is naked. But it's difficult to understand where the problem lies in a certain structure, and why all this is wrong, or what premises are violated. We have two different issues here. The first is the software patents debate. As we had all these discussions about software patenting in Europe, the European debate. And what we are a little bit more concerned about now is the next phase. What comes next after this debate? So last year it was all under this pressure, under this Damocles sword of this EU debate. And now we are a little bit more free. We can act more proactively in avoiding the problem of software patents. While there are still threats, but it's more difficult to mobilize people or to keep discussions ongoing when there's no such Damocles sword, because of course such imminent threat creates some awareness. And during the debate it was always like act now, and you get this email messages sent out. Now it's really urgent, and 2 months later it was even more urgent, because the last time action and one last time action followed the other. What we want to talk about a little bit more are general issues, IPR enforcement, community patent, and the other issues that also discuss the patent law on a kind of wider scale. A Ferrari is a nice car, but when you work on the field, you probably choose another model. So these are two different cars which serve two different purposes, and the patent system is also a kind of car, a kind of instrument, a kind of tool. And when you work in software, it's not really that useful. And, usually in the debate, this is a rhetorical trap. It was asked, what makes software so special? Of course, software is different from physical products and of the markets where the patent system traditionally is applied, and there's no such thing than an invention in the classical sense in software. But when you argue on this level, it sounds rather philosophical, or like, well, all ideas have to be free, or like that, which is not really convincing in the political level. So this is a kind of rhetorical trap to discuss about the very essence of software versus hardware and where the difference lie. But we made this propaganda piece, a computer is known a washing machine, to tell about the difference. And I think this graphic is a good description about where the problems lie, because I cannot present you a patent. It's always worse to read a patent and to try to understand the complicated language in which it is written. Usually in the text of a patent you will find a description of this graphic, which will not tell you much more about what's going on. Patents cover abstractions on a conceptual level of software, not like copyright, which is tailored to the actual code you produce, but it protects software on a conceptual level. And the question we face is, do we really need protection on a conceptual level? And if so, does patent law protect the right object, an object which is worse to get protected? We want to avoid that whole classes of programs, of solutions, so to speak, are patented so that you cannot come up with a better solution, so that competition is inhibited, which is quite difficult. Many patents on somehow complicated issues like MP3 and compression stuff, and where you could think, okay, this is rocket science, that this deserves patent protection. Even in those areas, often not the real issue, which we attribute to some kind of, oh, this is high level, the high level of discussions, but when you read the patent writings associated to it, it will be often more or less this style here. On a very general level, like you could patent, say, the moon rays, and you need a rocket, and you need some form of oxygen supply, and you can also create these graphics, and how the rocket interacts with the power supply unit, and so on. But actually, this does not help you to go to the moon, or to go to Mars, because this is, of course, the solution, but on this high abstract level, it does not really matter. And the same applies that it does not really matter that conceptual thinking is often not really the problem of software development. I mean, everybody has ideas what you can implement in software, but the problem is often that you don't find the people who have the skills to implement it, and that implementation is really the problem. On an abstract level, you know what needs to be done or what could be done. And the last talk here about data retention, I think also showed it to us that politicians come up, okay, you have to store the data. This is abstract. You have to store the data, the communication data. But for an internet service provider who looks into the details, it's a little bit more complicated and creates complicated technical issues, which you cannot discuss on this abstract level. So this abstraction is really of the point and has little value on the market. I think this is also the core. Not that patents are trivial. They are not trivial per se. This is not the problem, but that they are too abstract, too general for the market, and inhibit to come up with better solutions. our criteria, so to speak, to a perfect system, if we wanted conceptual protection, would be, and this is a very simple test, cheap, fast, and narrow. And, cheap means that you don't have to pay too much. The welfare burden of the system is not that high. Fast means that the system adopts to market dynamics. The patent system, the examination lasts about 3 years, and patent protection for 20 years. Now, the software market is a very dynamic market, and when you come up, when you ask professionals in the field of software, what kind of software patent do you want? And they say, well, 3 years protection would be okay. Unfortunately, the patent system is designed for 20 years. And this is really like trying to transform a Ferrari that it could work on the field and pluck the field. And narrow means that the claims associated in the patent or in these protection instrument are narrowly defined and not too general, so that whole classes of programs, of solutions, of possibly better implementations are inhibited by this legal protection instrument. And copyright is a narrow protection. You actually, what you wrote, your text, your code is protected automatically. And patent protection, on the other hand, is a very broad protection instrument, which protects whole classes of products. But I don't know. I think it is, and we will come back to that. And this is the word of industrial copyright. We don't want software patents, but there might be some areas, I think, of business applications and things like that, which are not, perhaps not innovative, but where some abstractions have to be protected. And there it could be useful to have a kind of conceptual protection, like software on a very general level, say class models or UML, things like that, to have a different protection instrument for such specified implementation concepts leading to implementation. Yeah, perhaps Tunea just takes over.
I'll go. Okay, now we had a short overview over the whole situation. What I want to do is give you a short number of facts and then have start the discussion, because this is supposed to be a debate with you, the people who are attending this Congress. Well, first of all, we go back. One should understand is that software patents are not just a stupid idea that came up in the European Union. It's basically an international problem that, it's also based on a lot of misinterpretation, because we do have, for example, as we heard yesterday, the TRIPS agreement, which some people say does cover software, and some others think it does not. And so some people think that we have international pressure, which forces us to have this means of protection for software, which is, in our opinion, inadequate. So if you clarify if we get a clarification of a legal situation, we might actually get to this point where we have this industrial copyright, which André talked about, which is our idea. We're not just against something, we're against software patents because we have a better alternative, which is our idea of industrial copyright. But nevertheless, we still have to put up with the things that are happening now, which we did in the software patent debate. And maybe you're asking yourself, what happened in this year? Because we always kept you up to date until this point. And you heard that we had another decision on software patents last year, which was preceded by a very theatrical installation where we had lots of, it was funny, we had lots of companies that came up and said we want software patents, and then you found out that these companies just started to exist and probably just for the purpose to be a company for software patents. And we also had lots of, interesting things happening, like when the European Council debated on software patents, they put it, the item of software patents on the schedule of the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries, the Council, and of course, software patents are very much related to agriculture. The good thing was we had Poland, and Poland deleted this A item from the list. So they brought it up again, and it was again added to the list, and Poland deleted it again. So they had to put up with the problem behind it, which was the debate. Also, we had an interesting offer for members of the parliament to get ice cream if they vote in favor of software patents. Well, it's not exactly corruption, but it comes very close, I think. But in the end, all these measures that the, as it was called, the Goliath Party, but I don't think that's adequate. It's just, we could as well call it the Tortoise Party, because they were so incapable of adapting to the situation. They were not very successful. In the end, we had the parliament decision against software patents, and this means that this part of our fight is over, but still we have this threat, and we're very much sure that things like software patents or intellectual property, property enforcement directive, which I'll come to in a second, are going to turn up again and again. And so what we need now is a directive that says that software is not patentable. As I said before, we need to clarify that we're not obliged to have software patents by the TRIPS agreement, and we need to clarify that we don't want software patents in Europe. We did this before, but not on the EU level. It's just this European Patent Convention, which some people have a very funny opinion about. Okay, now I mentioned the IP Rights Enforcement Directive, which is another part of the software patent problem, especially in combination with TRIPS, because what we had was a directive that stated that all intentional infringements intellectual property rights, which wasn't not specified, it could be any intellectual property right, that any of these infringements had to be had to involve criminal sanctions against the person committing the infringement, which is imagine you write software, as we always do every day, and you get in jail because someone thinks that you violated the patent, even if you don't get in jail, you're still, if it's a criminal sanction, you're a criminal in this case, because you violated the patent in an intentional case, because intentional is not really defined, nor is the term of intellectual property right, which one was affected and which ones are not. It could also be your last name is in the name of a famous company, so you're violating trademark rights. And are you a criminal then? What we have here is the directive I'm talking about. And we could look into it.
It's a double directive, a very, very special style. It's a framework decision and a directive. But the European Court of Justice ruled that other procedures have to be used. So this directive now is stalled and will pop up next year again, probably in a very similar fashion. And, the structure is that the Commission explains why certain parts of the directive are needed. Then we have recitals. And what I encourage everybody is to actually read those directive proposals and always go to the source, so to speak, the primary source, which is the legal text, and don't stick to press releases or whatever, because often these press releases or what politicians talk about, those measures, this changes. But what's actually written in there is what counts in the end. And here we have Article 3, which is very broad. They say it's derived from TRIPS, but TRIPS has a different and I think better wording. This is rejected, Article 3, in the current form, not only by us, not only we think this is dangerous, but the whole other industry, I think also the BSA and so on, because this is so broad. As a member state shall ensure that all intentional infringements, in German, vorsätzliche, I think TRIPS has willful infringements and is reduced to copyright and trademark violations, and here all intentional infringements of an intellectual property right, which is not really legal language because the term intellectual property right is not defined. Perhaps at the WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, they also discuss traditional knowledge. Now expect violation of traditional knowledge, intentional violation of intentional knowledge would create criminal sanctions or like that. So they use terminology which is not really defined yet, which is derived from a lobbying context, not from legal language. On a commercial scale, well, this is of minor importance usually, and attempting, aiding, or abetting and inciting such infringements, this even broadens it, are treated as criminal offenses. What has this to do with software patents? It's very easy to infringe a software patent. It happens to big companies. Often you don't really know whether you infringe a patent or not. All intentional infringements. The question is, of course, the hard criteria here is intentional. But the question is, how will this be interpreted in the courts? What's an intentional infringement, say, of a patent or of a trademark? So this could be very dangerous. We currently have such regulation in place in Germany, I think in the Netherlands, about when you infringe a patent intentionally, that you can be prosecuted by criminal law, I think, or in Germany or the Netherlands. The reason behind it is, of course, because of this TRIPS agreement, which says that such measures shall be provided. But these measures are, first of all, hardly in use. This is one part of the problem. And the other part of the problem, when they are in use, and you will find that when you Google the internet, when you should use this, is they're used in civil cases, of enforcement cases, in order to get proof. Because criminal offenses are treated by the state. So the state attorney cares about it. And you don't have to you don't have to spend that much money. And there's another problem in this directive. Despite the wonderful thing that the penalties are harmonized, which is in the framework decision currently, this is joint investigation teams, which the German BMJ is very critical of, which means that rights holders shall assist the law enforcement authorities Article 4, joint investigation teams. And so this is also, they are also critical about that. This IPR2, how we call it, is introduced, and all these criminal sanctions were left out at the IPR Enforcement Directive 1. And they were left out, and this was presented as a kind of compromise because everybody rejected to include them. Now, we think this is dangerous regulation. The case under which it is put forward is product piracy. You know, this watches or like that, Rolex watches from Southern Europe, or things like that. And interestingly, the EU currently has, for the customs, has regulation in place for that purpose. And this regulation from the customs regulation about what product piracy is and so on is totally incompatible with this law. It's different and it's better. It's even better what we currently have in place in order to prosecute such real criminal acts of organized crime. So the existing framework is much better than what they propose here.
Just as a side note, another funny thing you find in this directive is that on the set of criminal provisions, you have this ban on access to public assistance or subsidies, and it depends on the definition. This is always a problem in this directive, that most of the wording used is not correctly defined. So if you really extend this directive to a per-person level and you're writing software and you're getting Hartz IV, then you might be banned from getting Hartz IV, which is interesting. Just as a side note, it's a matter of interpretation, which is always a problem with these laws, because no one knows how to interpret them, and the interpretation changes every couple of months until court steps in and decides it, and you can't predict that. Anyway, why we're telling this to you is that we're looking for open office. there it is. I found it. Why we're telling this to you is that we think that some of you are interested in this topic, otherwise you wouldn't be here. And we think that you can help us because we're the FFI, but you're the people that make up Europe, and you're the people who want their rights defended. And also, I think you have some time. What we're trying to do is to teach you to defend your rights, which we'll get to in the end. You don't have to go to Brussels. I don't mean that, but it's just an introspective of what is going on there. You have lots of parliamentarians and other people who make decisions, and you have all these lobbyists hanging around them, telling them what they think is right. And of course, everyone thinks that something else is right. And the one thing that we're missing in Brussels are people telling them what you think is right. And this is our mission.
Actually, these pictures are from our events. This here is in the restaurant of the parliament, and here are some stakeholders which were invited to a conference of us. And this is a kind of blown up statue that was created at Place du Luxembourg, was erected there. This is very close to the parliament and the public space somehow. So I wonder how they managed to erect the statue there. So we try to be present in Brussels, but of course you don't win such a debate with T-shirts and balloons, but
and statues.
Discussing the issue with parliamentarians. And I think it's very important that there's a lot of regulation going on the European level, that everybody who's concerned about it shall cast an eye on these proposals, look it up, give feedback, analyze text, get to the real source code, so to speak, of law. Because, changing law is very similar to, say, changing software. Patches are called amendments, and Parliament votes about amendments to those proposals. And so you have to edit the text, and editing on one side could have effects on other, and often it's a kind of what happens then machine implemented in this stuff.
Try not to crash it.
Okay. I have another interesting document here, just to demonstrate here. Ach, hier bin ich noch nicht raus. Ach, du Scheiße. Okay, so these are the amendments that were introduced, a part of the amendments that were introduced inside Parliament. And such a document, which is prepared by the tabling office, then looks like that you have an amendment, the amendment has a number, one side is the position of the council or the basis text. And on the right side, you see the change proposal. This proposal here, Amendment 42, was proposed by Barbara Kudrica, Tadeusz Zwifka. I don't know them. And then you have below, you have a justification. And often these change proposals are tabled by many different MEPs, and there are a whole lot of them. And you can use the justification to introduce some ideas. It's common practice that these amendments are proposed by lobbyists often. And actually, we wrote amendments for MEPs and presented them to the MEPs and asked them to sign them for the tabling office and things like that. So. It's like when you contribute a patch to software and you need the approval of some core developer or like that, because you don't have access to the system. And then there's a vote about these amendments, and these amendments then get applied to the text. And often there are some conditions and within the text, kind of hypertext. And in our vote, there were a lot of amendments. And because we prepared all these amendments, and we had all the whole set of amendments, our opponents, which I think, in fact, were stronger at this stage of the debate, but they suddenly bailed out. They said, okay, we stop this here, and we want to reject the directive. So in the end, everybody was happy because the directive was rejected. But what we actually wanted was a better directive, And this is a directive which includes interoperability provisions, which clearly rules out software patents and so on. So we don't have this legal validity, legal security yet. And for this purpose, other directives are useful, other legislative projects. And for this purpose also, the community patent is an interesting issue. And there are some motions on the national level in Parliament in order to define these terminology terms, what is the field of technology, all this complicated stuff, what's technical, and so on. Especially interoperability rights is something which needs to be addressed on the European level, and there are many opportunities, and the time is really good for that, because there's a kind of inter-industry support for the issue of interoperability.
Well, we were just talking about the amendments, and in that sense, I want to encourage you to, if you hear about issues that turn up, like software patents or like the data retention directive, you can go to the EU web servers and you can download the document, and then you look at it, and you sit down for, say, half an hour, read the document, and then you sit down for another 10 minutes and have your set of things that you dislike about the directive, and you just type them in. You say, this needs to be changed in my opinion, and this is a better way to do it. Of course, you need to get a clue about how to express yourself, but I think some of you have a very good opinion. And then you can propose these amendments. And the thing is, even if you have some mistakes in your formulation, then these amendments won't get adopted as they are, of course, but they will pass through MEPs, through their parties, and they will read them for you, and if they think, oh well, this sounds like a good idea, and some of them do think this, then they will just correct your mistakes. So don't be shy.
Okay. I just wanted to add, I think we cannot get through with all these issues, but about the WIPO. The WIPO is a very interesting forum. It's in Genève, a UN institution, which is responsible for some copyright treaty, and it was it's often referred to as forum shifting from the WIPO to the WTO. It's a diplomatic body. The people there are very, very diplomatic, and when you get accredited to the WIPO, you get a whole lot of documents which are mostly baseless, really baseless what's written there, because this is diplomatic speech, another level of discussion, so to speak, which is very difficult for pragmatic people. And you know, on the Parliament level, it's always said that Parliament is a kind of by anti-democrats, that Parliament is kind of talking booth. But in fact, it's the case that in governmental structures, like in third world countries, in dictatorships, there's much more of insubstantial discussion, and this also applies to the diplomatic level and at the WIPO. But there are interesting things going on, because NGOs made inroads. There was an alliance called this year Friends of Europe. I think there will be another talk about this at this meeting. Friends of Europe, which included a whole lot of NGOs, and they introduced a proposal for access to knowledge treaty. Now, I believe that this proposal is not very good, but it addresses a lot of issues like interoperability and other exceptions, especially for the developing nations. And it was put forward by Brazil and India, and they are somehow the leaders of the third world countries, or the G20 countries. So this is now equally discussed on this diplomatic forum. What I have here is the planned budget for WIPO, and that's something which concerns me a lot about the whole debate. I personally have a kind of liberal opinion, perhaps a little bit idealistic. I think our constitution says that public opinion building is one of the role of political parties. And I think civil society also contributes to build, help you to assist, to create your own opinion. But in the end, our representatives, parliament, shall decide about legislative acts and control the government, which is elected by parliament. What people are often not very concerned about is the fact that in reality, institutions often have strong institutional interests. This also includes WIPO. And especially in this area of so-called intellectual property or patent law, we often see the strange thing that governments or these institutions take part in lobbying themselves. And when you look at the WIPO strategic framework, something in the UN papers, which you always have to be very aware of, that something is wrong, but it's common on the international level, is when you listen to phrases like promotion of good health, promotion of intellectual property, or like that, because this is always somehow associated with propaganda events on the one hand, or where these international institutions somehow lobby parliament or lobby governments. So governments somehow lobby themselves. We have to finish soon. And now here, for instance, this program here on page 32, to promote an IP culture. And they have lobbyists at the European Parliament and so on. This is an international organization, and they lobby parliament, which is quite strange. And this is very common in this area of law. And here they have 30 million Swiss francs for 2006-2007 for this single project and, you know, and so on. But these international organizations, and this is our reform request, don't provide the kind of information which we really need, urgently need. This is like economic analysis. Whole WIPO employs no economist. I asked the director general, and he said, no, we don't have economists because economists are too expensive. Now, WIPO has a budget of 500 million. This sounds a little bit fishy, but the problem is that real analysis, like economics of the patent system, how does it work, how can the quality be improved, how can it get speed up, this kind of analysis is not really provided by the institutions, and instead somehow the system is promoted. And so we have a situation where it compares to a kind of sweet porridge device. You know the story of sweet porridge. Now, more is better. We need more protection. We need more enforcement. But this is like driving a car, and someone says, "Oh, you have to speed up and be faster." And anytime you hit the brake, you get electrocuted. By your co-driver. So this is not really what we want. We want good driving, and we want fast driving, and we want a good working patent system, and not such general baseless promotion of the system as a means in an end. Now, there are a lot of programs. These programs are always very general. When you look at this language, which is really awful, expected results, strengthen ability of member states, in particular business and research institutions, to develop and manage IP assets. All this is very general, and there are a lot of other programs here, 12 million for this program, and so on. What I found useful is that these institutions start to change and improve a lot when you discuss what they are doing, because what these institutions do is a lot of is very intransparent, and the internet gives us a great opportunity to view all the documents, to analyze what they do, to report about them, to form up interest group, to alliance with other groups, to discuss about them and what they are doing. And I think that this institutional reform of these bodies will be very important. This also applies to the European Patent Office, which has to stay away from, on my perspective, in interfering in patent policy, because this is the role of the lawmaker or of the public or of civil society to discuss about these issues, but certainly not of an international organization like the EPO or like WIPO to take part in policy making and influence the lawmaker.
Okay. Well, I don't. Do we still have time anyway?
I think we don't have time.
Yeah.
But
right.
There will be a workshop at 15 o'clock in some room and.
In some room, yeah. Just figure out where Andre is going. Originally, we wanted this to be a debate, but no one raised hands, no one went to the microphone, so we just talked. And I think you're pretty much informed now, and you can always look for one of us. I'm in Saal 4 all the time, so if you're looking for me, you can ask me questions, bug me with whatever, or flame me into the ground. And our message is support your rights. And still no one who has an urgent question? No.